As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is 12:36 Friday morning. Here in the DMV, was not intending to be up this late finishing up the podcast, but the news with this team never ends. Earlier this evening, the Commanders traded quarterback Sam Howell to the Seattle Seahawks, and just a few minutes ago, safety Cam Curl agreed to terms with the Los Angeles Rams on a two-year deal. Not saying either of those things was particularly surprising, but notable obviously because of who they are and what they have meant to this team. So we'll discuss those two things in a moment. As for my guest today, our guy Al Galdi, host of the Al Galdi podcast, joined me earlier today. We joked as we did the podcast that no doubt there will be some significant news that we are gonna not discuss because we don't know that it's coming. And then sure, even in fact, they signed a depth linebacker today during the show or during the conversation. So we did get that, but didn't have a chance to discuss Howe and Curl. What we did discuss was a position by position look at what's transpired so far. What do we make of some of the choices? What needs to happen? We theorize on what Adam Peters may think on a few different spots. And, you know, the conversation still very much holds up, obviously, at quarterback. You know, we did talk about Howe a little bit and what the Marcus Mariota signing meant. I think we had that accurate. But nonetheless, at that point, we just didn't know the trade was happening. So just factor that in. But always a fun conversation with Al. We'll get to that in a bit. Here on the Standing Room Only podcast, of course, you can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Standing. And if you are not yet a subscriber to The Athletic, $1 a month right now offer for 12 months. And I have my story up on the Sam Howell trade and what it symbolizes, what it means, what do we think of the return Washington got, all that good stuff. You can check that out on The Athletic. All right, so for those of you that have missed it or just want a refresher, the trade is as follows. Washington traded Sam Howell to the Seahawks. They also sent a fourth-round pick, number 102, and a sixth-round pick, number 179. In exchange, Washington gets back a third-round pick, number 78, and a fifth-round pick, number 152. So from the trade perspective, Washington still has 9 draft picks, but now they have 6 in the top 100. That is obviously quite a haul there. The net result of the trade of the picks essentially means, depending on which trade chart, like the Jimmy Johnson trade chart or what have you, that interpretation is sort of a late third, early fourth is sort of the benefit that they got here. Other charts say different things, but the Jimmy Johnson one is, you know, the most commonly discussed in public. So essentially that's kind of what you could say they got for Sam Howell. That's in sort of the aggregate. This is, we're talking the reality. They did get a third and they did get a fifth. Obviously, that's part of the overhaul for Adam Peters as he navigates his team into significant roster changes. Now, let's go back here a little bit. First off, before we even get into what the Hulls mean, just sort of run a poor one out for Sam Howell. Nice kid. He was obviously thrown into a weird spot last year where he gets named the starter six days after the season ended, where he made his first career start. And we don't have to go through it all again. I wrote about this at the end of the year, how Ron Rivera seemingly kind of used this promotion for Sam Howell as a way to turn the page on the Carson Wentz conversation. And the fact that the team, missed a playoffs chance at the end of that 2022 season. And, look, I don't know that Howell was, I don't think that was really a fair call for the team to make Howell the starter essentially at that point. You didn't even know who you'd bring in as a free agent. They did obviously get Jacoby Brissett. But Rivera, look, he was in a desperate spot trying to figure out how to, change the subject, keep his job, amid an ownership change, all these things. Through the Hail Mary, it didn't quite work. But what's overlooked sometimes, even by myself, is, Sam Howell started all 17 games. And that's because even though obviously there were ups and downs, and even so late in the year when things got out of hand during the 8-game losing streak, he was benched twice, in part to almost kind of like save himself. He didn't give Jacoby Brissett an opening the whole time. Whether it was an OTAs, training camp, Sam Howell came out and did not blink. Obviously, it didn't all go great. He led the league with 21 interceptions. There were some pick sixes. His role in terms of holding on the ball too long in the pocket led to a lot of those 65 sacks. We get all that. And that's a practical aspect from the 2023 season. But I always try to look at it like, we know he's in a bad spot. The team is a mess. It's a kind of a lame duck season. New offensive coordinator. The offensive line isn't ideal. All these things. The defense was awful. But Sam Howell kept it going. And, he stuck in there. And he showed a lot of toughness, obviously. So when they beat New England on the road to go to 4-5, I still didn't buy them as a playoff team, but I at that point said to myself, Sam Howell has done enough to justify being interested in him and where his career goes going into next season. Because at that point, who was thinking they were going to get the second pick? But as the losses unfolded and the season just imploded and they were moving up into the top 10, into the top 5, into top 2, it became clear at that point that once Ron Rivera was let go, that a new regime would say, hey, we don't know Sam Howell. We're not connected to Sam Howell. We didn't draft him. We don't get credit if he plays well. Even if that's not said implicitly, it's always sort of in the back of people's minds. And also just at a basic profile level, whoever these prospects would be that you would be available for them at 2 would profile better than Sam Howell, a fifth-round pick from 2022. Regardless of the fact that it feels like half the league has said at some point that they would have, they thought about drafting Sam Howell on day 2 back then, but they didn't do that. And obviously we're talking about Jaden Daniels, Drake May, if Caleb Williams were to be available at 2, maybe J.J. McCarthy, whatever. All those players are getting picked somewhere we think, number 1, number 2, number 3, somewhere in the top 10, top half of the first round. And Sam Howell's a fifth-round pick. He's undersized. I don't know if he'll be able to curtail his penchant for holding onto the ball, all those types of things. So maybe he is ultimately a high-end spot starter or, he's got some upside. Clearly, that is what Seattle determined. I was told and reported that 4 teams were involved in the negotiations with Washington for Sam Howell. John Schneider, the Seahawks GM, I tweeted out a video of him, an interview he was giving after the trade, and he said that they were sweating it out to try to get him. In the end, obviously, Seattle got the deal done. They've got Geno Smith, and now they have a younger quarterback in Sam Howell. Maybe he's the backup only, but you know, you can't draft a quarterback that gives you a certain amount of upside every year. Just because you draft somebody doesn't mean they have the juice or have the potential to play at a higher level. I think Sam Howell does in a lot of ways. The lack of size, yeah, that's going to be a problem. The turnovers in the sacks, if he can't get that under control, well, then obviously that's a huge problem. But he's got moxie, he's got a big arm, he's got toughness, he's got mobility. That's why Seattle wanted him. That's why other teams are interested in him. And I got into this in my story on The Athletic about sort of how so much of the debate with Sam Howell has been what is his actual value in this league? And it became, you know, is he a starter? Is he not a starter? How much can you get for him in a trade? Some people couldn't even comprehend a fourth round pick, which is what I had reported that two teams or executives with two teams told me that they would consider giving up for him. One of those was with a team that's been in the quarterback market this year. And now they get it done. Now, for those of you who are saying, well, wait a minute, Sam Howell was still in a cheap contract. Why trade him? Why quarterback is so important. Why not just leave him be? You know, I think the reason is simple. Like, what does leaving him be mean? The second I was telling you guys well before free agency started that Sam Howell but was likely to get traded. That assuming that Adam Peters viewed the world in the conventional way, and sometimes conventional is logical, right? It's not always boring. If he's seeing the way that I do, they're going to want to bring in a veteran mentor type quarterback. Similar to how Washington had Jacoby Brissett last year. And that's not going to be Sam Howell. Whatever Sam Howell is going to be, he is not today a mentor for a rookie who he would surely probably want to compete with, right? And if Sam Howell is your third string, while that sounds great, what's his value now going forward? Out of sight, out of mind. If he's not playing, how is he upgrading his value? And I think what people just didn't appreciate was that he did have value, as we saw with this trade. Washington did not sign Marcus Mariota or give him $6 million with an upside to $10 million to be QB3, nor did Mariota come here for that. We actually did talk to Marcus Mariota as well as several of the other players who've been added now to the team, including Frankie Louvu and Dorrance Armstrong. But Mariota said, hey, look, you know, I kind of get the deal, but I'm ready to be helpful. I'm ready to come in and be a backup, and I'm ready to start. I'm here to help this team. And frankly, I don't know what's going to happen. I've told you guys my theory, or my belief, I should say, that I wouldn't start a rookie quarterback to a degree, or if not the whole year. But now that we have an actual person, it's Marcus Mariota. I don't know I want him starting 17 games. So that's a whole conversation for another day. The point is, though, that Mariota, who himself was a number two pick in 2014 after winning the Heisman, is going to be a better mentor for this rookie, whether that's Daniels or May or whatever they do. So the whole goal for them, beyond changing the roster, adding new pieces, is to maximize this quarterback. I think one of the mistakes that the previous regime made is that they did a lot of half measures. You know, I just to use one as an example that I've used before, it's one thing to have traded for Carson Wentz and whatever red flags existed, I get it, but then to not put him in the best position possible, i.e., knowing this guy gets sacked a lot, you got to have better protection in front of him, and they ended up with the Andrew Norwell, Trey Turner thing at guard. That completely didn't work and led to part of the downfall, along with, you know, Wentz's own mistakes. I feel like here, so far, is an example of them understanding that you've got to maximize the situation, and trading Howell for picks not only gives them more draft picks and again, six in the top 100, but it just kind of moves it on. You have the veteran there with Mariota to help this kid. He's not the only one, of course. You've got multiple, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, Tavita Pritchard still around. You got other coaches, but, you know, it does help to have that veteran in there. Anyway, Sam Howell's been traded. I'm sure we'll talk about it more down the line. There's still some fascinating aspects to all of this, and of course, we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm not doubting that Sam Howell could play in this league. What his level is in terms of starter or not, I don't know about that. People can improve, though. If he can cut down on the turnovers and the sacks, then, you know, he's got a real shot. Seattle obviously thinks so, and Seattle is, you know, John Schneider is a pretty good GM. So kudos to Sam Howell for getting a fresh start in the Pacific Northwest. He, by the way, played pretty well there last year in that game against Seattle. So Sam Howell is out. That leaves Marcus Mariota, Jake Fromm, and whoever this number two pick will be. Again, we'll have plenty of time to talk more about the quarterback situation going forward. All right, and now as far as Cam Curl goes, you know, if I say that I wrote off him returning here, you know, that should not be that surprising. You know, today's news should not be that surprising. I think what is a bit surprising to some, and maybe even to me a little bit, is how low of a figure he signed for. 2 years, up to 13 million. That is far less than the 10 plus million a bunch of us were even discussing, you know, a few weeks back. Not to say that I was, I mean, I think you guys heard me say, like, look, Cam Curl's a good player. He did a lot of good things. His story is pretty impressive. A seventh round pick becoming a starter as a rookie, started all 4 years, was a hitter, was aggressive, was a solid piece in the secondary. He's from everything I can tell, a pretty good dude. His teammates liked him. Fans clearly liked him. Great name. All that stuff. The lack of turnovers was obvious. And, you know, in talking to some teams during this offseason, they just did not seem to be overly impressed with the tape. I think everybody on this team, by the way, just took a hit because of how poor things were, especially on the defense side last year. But nonetheless, Cam Curl is... it didn't seem like it would make sense he would be coming back here. And then on top of it, they signed Jeremy Chinn and re-signed Jeremy Reeves. You still have three other young safeties there. I think Cam Curl had some figures in mind. Washington was not prepared to come anywhere near all that, so they moved on. And now Curl's moving on to the Rams. Best of luck to him, obviously, out there. And, you know, we'll see again. We can talk more about Cam Curl down the line. I forgot to say at the top, two other things happened today. Kendall Fuller signed a 2-year deal with the Dolphins, and Curtis Samuel signed a 3-year deal with the Buffalo Bills. Again, neither person broke the bank, but, you know, they're in good spots. Both are with AFC East contenders. Good for them for moving on. Again, not surprising if you've been listening or reading me to see Fuller, Samuel, and Curl go by. The only players who I was looking at to return were sort of what's happened so far: Jeremy Reeves, Jamison Crowder, and a surprise today, F.A. Obada also back. Here's how I found this out. We were doing Zoom interviews today with several of the new players. So they would just drop them in kind of one after another after they had signed their contract and done their physical and all that stuff. And then out of the blue, I'm looking at my Zoom and F.A. Obada is sitting in the seat. And I'm like, wait a minute, what's happening? And then I look at Twitter to see that they had brought him back. He had some really interesting things to say about Dan Quinn. He talked about his injury recovery. We'll have to get a better read on his recovery timeline. But if he's able to come back, he's obviously a veteran piece who can play outside at end, at defensive tackle. If you count him as part of the rotation, it's now Dorrance Armstrong, Cleland Farrell, Dante Fowler, F.A. Obada, plus whatever they get, K.J. Henry, and whatever they get in the draft. I always liked Obada. Hopefully he's okay coming off this injury. And if he is, then, you know, it's a nice depth piece as well. All right. Let's get to my conversation with our guy Al Galdi. We went position by position trying to gauge what this team needs. We did not get into F.A. Obada either because that came later. But here's our conversation about all things Commanders here on the Standing Room Only podcast. Needless to say, it's been a busy stretch here for the Commanders in free agency, but never too busy to prevent a conversation, our weekly conversation with my guy Al Galdi from the appropriately named Al Galdi podcast.
doing our every other week bit. Al, it's been nuts. You certainly have had a fair amount to discuss because you're doing a daily podcast. You have had no shortage of information so far. How's it been going on your end?
Yes, this week has been rapid, and this week has been thorough. It has been quite the week. It is hard to remember a week like this. I mean, this is reminiscent in some ways of those early Dan Snyder free agencies, although this has a much different tone to it, and I think much more intellect to it. But this has been something, man. I mean, we are seeing massive roster overhaul, and I'm here for it. I like what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think my two big takeaways right now are one, we need to wait before making too many assessments until we hear from the principals because we don't know the big picture. I certainly was talking for a couple of days about, okay, I assume this is how Frankie Louvu is going to fit in. You know, maybe he's going to be the mic, he's going to be the have the green dot. They'll move him around, but that will be his role and presumably Jamin on the other side. And then they signed Bobby Wagner and they're like, you know what? A quintessential middle linebacker type. Who knows? Who knows what the full picture really is until they get done. So we're going to talk about it because this is what we do. But until we hear from Quinn and Peters and everybody else, it's hard to know exactly how it looks. They have made a lot of changes, but they also needed to make a lot of moves. The other big thing is they clearly did not like the roster that they inherited at this moment that we're talking. Thursday morning, they've re-signed only two players, both of them primarily on special teams, which is a very different level than like re-signing a potential offensive or defensive starter. It says a lot about what they thought of that group.
It totally does. And I've joked about this on my show, but I'm not 100% joking. That pause from Adam Peters at his intro presser off a question from your colleague, David Aldridge, about what Peters thought about the roster. And Peters gave this like ultra long pause. I actually timed it 3.3 seconds. It was almost like a 40 time that pause that Peters gave. And, you know, it really came off like he was not a fan of the roster and didn't have many nice things to say about the roster. And, you know, you never know with a pause like that, like who knows, maybe it was just kind of a random pause. But, you know, in hindsight, that does appear to have been very telling. And I really thought going into free agency, we might see this from a standpoint of the team didn't re-sign any of its pending unrestricted free agents going into free agency. And nine
Right.
times out of 10, if a team values a guy who's about to become a free agent, you sign the guy before free agency starts because you have that negotiating exclusivity. And Washington did not do that. And that was really telling. And then you add on to that the team non-tendering all three of its potential restricted free agents. No, they're not like big name guys, but it really does come across like Peters did not like this team, did not like this roster. This would be another repudiation of the last 4 years. And we're seeing massive overhaul. And, you know, it's interesting to me with these acquisitions, not a single one is like a foundational piece, right? Like they're all kind of guys who make sense and fit and fill needs. But, you know, nobody should be stunned if any or many of these guys are not here in 2 years, maybe even in a year. I mean, these are all low-cost, short-term, high-upside contracts, the likes of which you can get out if they don't work. So I don't know that this is like long-term stuff that we're seeing. I think a lot of it may just be establish a culture, find your footing, find your north, as Dan Quinn has said, and, you know, hopefully be competitive sooner rather than later. But I think we could be seeing more of this in future off seasons. Like I think the work is just beginning for this regime.
Yeah, and I had Grant Paulson on with me yesterday, and one of the questions we were discussing was exactly that. Like, I see people getting super hyped, let Peters cook, you know, all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, this isn't really much different than what they did in 2020. I know, like, we're you know, when Rivera inherits this terrible 3-win team, and the biggest move they made that year was Kendall Fuller 4 for 40. Other than that, it was the Logan Thomas's JD McKissick, like, all right, I under the radar, fill in the gap type players. And obviously that largely worked out fairly well. So they're not reinventing the wheel doing this. It's just that there's a lot of pieces and people forget that they just want to move on. I totally understand it. It's fun, it's new, it's different. So it feels like it's amazing, but I don't really know. I actually was saying, forget who's starting for 2024. How many 2025 starters did they just acquire? I would argue maybe no more than two and a half. If I'll assume Armstrong starts, but he didn't start always in Dallas, and who knows. That's about it. The rest of it is a complete no idea, and that's fine. I'm just saying that is something to consider. Now, to that end, let's do this. I haven't really done a position by position sort of breakdown yet, and I understand I'm tempting fate by doing this at 11:30 in the morning when who knows how many moves I'll have. But if things change, I'll update them in the introduction. So let's go through this. We'll try to do some speed dating here because I don't want to keep us both here forever. Quarterback, they obviously add Marcus Mariota. Notable name under normal circumstances. It's pretty clear he's the number two quarterback. You don't sign him to a $6 million deal, nor does he come to Washington because he surely must have other options to be the third guy. So even though there are three quarterbacks, the number two pick, Sam Howell and Mariota, it's pretty clear Mariota is the two. Now the question is, now what? Is Sam Howell getting traded? Are they keeping Sam Howell? I guess it could mean trading out of two, but I don't know if I'm putting Mariota in the driver's seat. So where are you? What are you thinking right now as we look at that spot?
Well, I don't think there's any way to take Washington getting Mariota other than as an indictment to at least some extent of what the regime thinks about Sam Howell. Now, I am not one of these people who wants to get rid of Sam Howell. I want the Commanders to keep Sam Howell. I think until the team has quarterback truly figured out, you want to keep as many young, promising quarterbacks as possible. You want to keep working with Sam, developing Sam. At the very least, he can be a good QB2, and who the heck knows, maybe he ends up finding his way back to being QB1. So I'm not in a rush to ship him off for some fifth or sixth round pick. But what matters here is what Adam Peters and Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury think. And if they look at Sam and they're like, this guy ain't it, he ain't going to be it, we're not impressed. If we can get anything for him, we want to get something for him, then I suppose trading him makes sense. But I just don't know how you could be so certain of that off one season as a starter. I mean, Mariota is what he is. Like, at this point, he's never going to be the guy he was drafted to be. You know, there's great irony in this, right? Marcus Mariota was taken with a number two overall pick, 2015 draft, a quarterback as a number two overall pick who has been a bust. Let's be honest about this. So, like, I feel like there's some sort of messaging here of this guy, number two overall quarterback, was not worked out. Our team presumably about to take a quarterback with a number two overall pick. Hopefully it works out better. But to synthesize it, I don't want Sam traded unless you can get like exceptional value for him, third round, maybe a fourth rounder. But what the team has done certainly would seem to suggest that it at the very least is open to trading Sam and is not in love with Sam.
You know how I just said a few minutes ago, like I'm tempting fate about discussing this team. Like I'm trying to confirm right now, Pelissero just reported that they added linebacker Anthony Pittman from the Lions. Now he's depth. He hasn't started. He's only started two games in his career, but he's played all 17 last 3 years. So there you go. We'll presume that's an accurate move. They did. I mean, look, they only, even with Wagner and Luvu, and even if we still say Jamin Davis is a linebacker, that's all they had. They still need probably two more guys at least. So there's another one. Presumably we'll he's a outside linebacker, it appears. So we'll deal with that later. But anyway, I think it's going to be fascinating. I don't think, like, if the Bears keep Justin Fields, because like, I feel like that trade market's going, is limited. That's going to be a controversy to some degree, him versus Caleb Williams to whatever degree. I don't think it's going to be the same level here with Sam Howell, but at the same point, there will be some of that, right? I mean, if they start a rookie quarterback week one and somebody struggles, there will be some people going, Sam Howell. But there's also like the basics of like just practice reps. We went back through this in 2019 with Dwayne Haskins when you had three quarterbacks and there was this talk of, is he getting enough reps, this, that, and the other. Now, presumably the number two pick would. But does Sam Howell not getting any? Is he the guy who's getting the fewer reps? How is that developing him then and all that? So it's going to be interesting. I guess it all comes down to what price they could get for him. I wouldn't just trade him for the sake of trading him. But maybe the market's going to be tighter because, again, it doesn't seem like there's much of a market for Fields, a different level than Howell. So maybe that's like apples to oranges. But we'll see. I've been asking this question because I'm really fascinated by this. I am of the opinion I would prefer the rookie to sit the first season, if all conceivable. I understand that that's unrealistic, but at least it seems reasonable to think he could sit out the first two games, four games. And if that's the case, would you rather have Mariota or Sam Howell start week one? I think to me, that's an interesting discussion.
Personally, I would want Sam, because with Sam, there is at least some upside. I think with Mariota, he's a road to nowhere. Now, I think if you're a playoff contender and you need a fill-in starter for a few weeks, maybe Mariota would be the choice, or maybe Mariota can do a good job for you. But I still view Washington as, you know, a team that is rebuilding, recalibrating. And I want guys who can be pieces moving forward. And I don't see Mariota as that. I see Mariota as, you know, another one of these stopgap guys. So at the very least, if for whatever reason you're not starting the quarterback who you drafted, and by the way, I don't want that. I do disagree with you on that. I'd like that guy to start as soon as possible, assuming that he's, you know, ready or reasonably ready. But if that guy's not playing, then at least give me another young quarterback who's playing and let's see how he's doing. I just feel like with Mariota, there would be this sense of whatever he does, what does it mean? It's not really taking us anywhere. But again, what I think, what you think, I think it's interesting what the team seems to think, which is if the guy who was drafted isn't starting week one, it would seem that the team wants Mariota as the starter and not Sam.
Yeah, I think that's all very interesting. So at a minimum, that's their room. Look, Mariota's fine as the two. I would prefer him as the two to a pure, obvious starter, like the way he was last year with Jalen Hurts, rather than a rookie, because, like I said, I don't know. I will see what they choose to do with the starter, but whatever. Anyway, that's the room. Now the question is what happens with Sam Howell? We'll see. I'm curious what Denver does, needless to say, and there's probably a couple other, and maybe even a team like the Rams, who are they looking for, you know, a potential bridge going forward because they've got an older quarterback who gets hurt, that type of deal. All right, running back. If I was doing a 53-player projection right now, I think we're good at running back. You got Brian Robinson, Austin Eckler, Chris Rodriguez. It's almost on paper a perfect type of trio to have for this. You've got the two hammer running backs, and you've got the, you know, pass-catching, shifty guy out of the backfield. Needless to say, Eckler is an exciting addition if he's even sniffing his heights of 2021 and 22 when he's leading the league in touchdowns. I mean, that's a huge deal. I'm not going to get that worked up, but I think I find it hard to believe, especially for the price, that anybody takes any issue with the Eckler signing.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, they're paying him next to nothing, and he's someone who, like you said, is only 2 years removed from a monster season. He also is known as a workout warrior, and so, you know, if a running back is going to stave off that decline at age 30, it might be someone like Eckler. I mean, I remember when the Skins brought in Adrian Peterson, and he looked like he was shot, and he ended up providing some decent production for the team in the 2018 and 2019 season, so maybe the team find similar success here with Austin Eckler. I mean, Eckler is like a Christian McCaffrey in that you almost have to look at him as a combo receiver running back. I don't even view him necessarily as like a pure back. And I don't think that he is someone who, even if you don't like, you know, philosophically spending money on a veteran running back, and I don't, like you said, I think it's hard to be too mad about it. You know, I did think that we would see the team take a back in the draft. I think that we still could see that. But I think Eckler was brought here to be on the team, and I would anticipate that being the case.
I think, you know, we'll still see what they do at receiver, which we'll get to in a second, but I think Eckler in what we perceive as the Cliff Kingsbury offense, if I'm like a PPR fantasy owner, like I'm like, oh, Austin Eckler, okay, let's see what you've got here. I think that's going to be, like, if they actually do have a better win-loss record next year than I'm assuming they will, or at least if their offense is significantly better than I'm sort of imagining, I think Eckler is going to be a massive reason why. And, you know, this could be, of all the signings they made, Eckler and Jeremy Chinn, the safety, are the two where I'm like, okay, if they are actually getting a guy who pre-injury was looking like a legitimate, you know, pro bowler and all these kinds of things, that could be pretty fascinating. As a flyer. So yeah, not much else to discuss there in that room. let's get to receiver, where they've done nothing to this point. Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson, De'Ami Brown. It's basically the room right now. Mitchell Tinsley's around. I guess we can count, Dax Milne or Jamison Crowder as well. But basically the question is, who's going to be the third receiver? If they're doing three receiver sets, it's not going to be De'Ami Brown, unless this new staff has a very different view or thinks they can get more out of him. And then, what is the player going to be? I think they need some size there, but, that's where that room is. Here's my question for you, though, I guess. I really wonder what they think of Jahan Dotson, because what they think of him may determine what type of receiver they're going to look for. If they see him as a slot guy, then they're going to want perhaps a bigger receiver on the outside. But if they view him as a true outside receiver, then, maybe they're willing to go for a more, hypothetically, I'm making this up, second-round draft, a Ladd McConkey or something, as a slot guy. I am curious what they think of Dotson, especially since, last year was off for whatever the reason, him or Hal or Bieniemy, it didn't quite work. So what do you think about the whole Dotson thing and how that relates to what they might do?
Yeah, it's interesting you said number three receiver, because I think it's possible the staff is looking for a new number two receiver. I think this is a big year for Jahan Dotson. I mean, if you look at his career, he's basically 1-1, right? Good rookie season, bad second season, and so we get the tiebreaker this coming season. But that was a disturbingly bad second season for Dotson, especially with the drops. I mean, remember when he was drafted, the whole thing was he's got these great hands and he walks around with a football, and this guy is never guilty of drops. And yet what we saw last season was him dropping a whole lot of balls, and it's hard to know what to make of that. The getting open metrics were not particularly favorable to Dotson either. So yeah, I think what the team does at receiver this offseason will be telling. I do expect activity at receiver. You mentioned De'Ami Brown. I think it's possible he doesn't even make the initial 53-man roster. I think we could see some real change at receiver. I think the only certainty is McLaurin's your WR1. I think beyond that, I think a lot is up in the air. And like I said, I think it's a big season for Dotson. I think there are a lot of guys on this team you can say that about. This past season, Dotson bad, Benjamin St. Juice bad, Deron Payne underwhelming. I think what we see from those guys this coming season and others is going to really be telling from a standpoint of what are these guys truly as NFL players? I feel like those guys are reaching these crossroads seasons in terms of trying to figure out how good they truly are. Was last season just a down season for these guys, or was last season more reflective of who these guys truly are? But I think receiver is a perfect example of Washington this past season. Of we go into the season thinking the position group is a strength, and we exit the season with a lot of questions, and I think those questions remain.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, to be honest, I'm actually curious what they think of Terry McLaurin. To be honest, not I'm obviously he's a good player and all that, but I mean, I don't know. Do they view him as a one receiver? Do they think, as good as Terry is, he's not been great at separation either? Do they think, hey, we kind of have to get more of a legit number one here? That's for another day, but I do wonder about that a little bit for sure. All right, tight end room. They signed Zach Ertz before free agency started. So again, if we're doing the 53 player roster projection, we could say, hey, they've got John Bates, they've got Zach Ertz, so that's sort of a blocker and a receiver type, plus Cole Turner and Armani Rogers coming off of his injury are there. If you want to be generous, you could say, okay, you got still two young guys who are developing, Bates can, he's not much of a threat in the passing game, but he's just, good blocker, all that. And Ertz, he's obviously had some big years in this league. I think those days are behind him, but can he be an effective pass catcher? Sure. If that's the room, how are we feeling?
Yeah, I don't feel great about tight end. And I think more needs to be done at tight end. And, tight end usually is a position you can address on days two and or three of NFL drafts. So I would anticipate that being the case. But, you think about tight end. So Logan Thomas gone. John Bates to me is just a guy. I mean, he's fine, but I don't see a lot of upside with him. I think Cole Turner has been a big disappointment, and I get he was a fifth round pick. So it's okay, we're not talking about a top 10 pick that has not worked out. But as you remember, there was a decent amount of hype for Cole Turner, and he just has not done much. I mean, Cole Turner last season, a lost season for this team, especially at the tight end position, was inactive for 5 of the last 10 games. I mean, think about that. What does that say about his development? And then Armani Rogers, I mean, we all were encouraged by what he did in 2022, but coming off the Achilles injury, we don't know where he's at. And, you know, he still is largely unproven. So, you know, there is no given that any of these guys are on the initial 53-man roster. And I would say this about Zach Ertz. I mean, I anticipate him making the team, but that contract is a nothing contract. And his last NFL stop was the practice squad of the Lions. So I don't think anyone should be stunned if Ertz doesn't make the team. Now, again, I would expect him to make the team, but I think at tight end, you have a lot of wide open real estate. And I think there is a lot that can be done. I think there is a lot of opportunity. So, you know, if Ertz makes the team, he could end up being the TE1. If Cole Turner gets on track, maybe he finally busts out. I certainly hope that he does, because I do think that he's gifted. But I think you could argue that of all the position groups on the team, tight end is the weakest slash the one with the most questions. I mean, there is not a single thing that you would label close to a certainty for the Commanders at tight end, at least in my view.
Hold on. I just screwed up a tweet. See, trying to do 12 things at once here, confirming the the Pittman thing. And then somebody was like, I said that he's the former Lions linebacker signing with the Lions. And somebody texted me like, okay, serenity now. Yeah, I wrote the other day, the Zach Ertz move should not preclude them from adding more tight ends. I think the wonder is, clearly, I hear you, maybe he doesn't make the team, but at the same point, clearly that's like the Kingsbury, hey, I want this guy here. Would I say, hey, sure, go ahead and draft somebody? Yeah, but like, this is not considered to be a great draft for tight ends. I think our Dane Brugler had like 4 in his top 100. So, you know, there's always the, sure, you can draft somebody on day 3 guy, but is that better than what they have? Cole Turner may be a perfect example of what I'm interested to see. Does this coaching staff get more out of some of these younger guys than the last one did? And tight end was a room where, you know, Pete Hayner left and, he was the grizzled vet, and they just moved up Todd Storm from the assistant. And I have no idea if Todd Storm is really good or not enough or whatever, but the development has not been there. So therefore, I am curious to see what they think of a guy like Turner or Rogers. But yes, to me, they should be looking to get more out of this spot. I don't think there's much debate about that. All right. Offensive line. All right. So if we had to sort of do not the 53 here, but the starting lineup projection, let's go right to left. Andrew Wiley, I don't think he's going anywhere. The tackle market's not that great. He wasn't as bad as people act like it was. I just think, you know, it's not Trent Williams or Chris Samuel or Morgan Moses, but he was fine. Sam Cosmi looks like a potentially emerging standout for this group. Maybe, you know, we'll start talking about Pro Bowl in a bit. Center, they signed Tyler Biadasz. Excellent choice. Hopefully he works out, but he's in his 20s. He's durable, which is something you can't say for pretty much anybody who's played center here for the last 3 years. And, you know, he gives you that veteran with the quarterback. The left side of the line is where things get trickier. They signed Nick Allegretti from the Chiefs. To me, this is like when they signed Wes Schweitzer in 2020. He could start, but you're not locked into it. So possibly if it's they see somebody on day 2 of the draft, maybe that player that comes in. As for left tackle, there is nobody. Like, literally, there's not a single player here that you would say, go week 1, you're starting. I guess Trent Scott or whatever, but like, not really. Not Braden Daniels. So this is where, but to me, this was the position they would use attack in the draft. Seems like they're heading in that direction, other than I would assume they will at some point add some swing tackle, if not Cornelius Lucas, then somebody else. Are you liking what you have seen so far from this group, or, no?
Well, I think the Biadasz signing was good, and I think that could actually prove to be the most impactful of these free agent acquisitions, because if he brings that elusive stability at center, then that is such an upgrade over what has been with this team these last 3 seasons. So as you know, as I'm sure a lot of people listening know, this NFL draft is perceived to be excellent for offensive tackles. I mean, I've seen 10 different offensive tackles come up as potential first round picks, certainly guys who could be taken on the first, say, 45, 50 picks. And it just so happens that the Commanders have multiple picks in that span. So, you certainly could go offensive tackle once you take the quarterback at two or via that number two overall pick. Maybe you find a way to get multiple offensive tackles in the draft. So I think the draft is going to dictate a lot. I do think, though, in free agency, you do have to cover yourself from a standpoint of bringing in some potential starting option at an offensive tackle spot. So, like, re-signing Cornelius Lucas to me would make sense. But it would be lovely if this team was able to go into next season with multiple young offensive tackles who the team has confidence in starting. And, maybe you could kick Andrew Wiley into guard, which I think is probably his best spot. So I think there are a lot of ways that this could go. But I think if you're looking for, like, that true next guy for Washington at left tackle or at an offensive tackle spot, I think it's the draft. And I think, as most people are coming to know, if you're a good offensive tackle, more times than not, you're not making it to free agency. So trying to address that in free agency, I don't think is the way to go. I think you can get depth at tackle via free agency. But if you're looking for, like, that true new guy to be your starter for years to come, you're going to find that guy in the draft. And I think that's the way to be thinking. And I think once we get beyond quarterback, that's the meat of this draft, certainly from a Commander's perspective, that you can really do some good things potentially at offensive tackle in this draft.
Yeah. And I talked about this on a previous podcast, but when I say that, like, they didn't really sign many multi-year starters, it doesn't look like, so far in free agency. The point I would say is, I don't know if it was a Simpsons reference, but, like, it's sort of like the free agency has been the snowplow, clearing the road for the draft, allowing them to say, okay, we've added enough veterans or depth that if we have to start this player, we can, thus allowing us in the draft to do whatever we think we need to do, whether it's the best player or we have to get another need or take advantage of stronger classes in the draft, whatever. That's the deal. So yes, it's weird on the surface that they have not signed a single tackle. And even if they bring in a Lucas, that's not a real long-term answer, but the draft is where that's coming from. The multi-year starters that they're concerned about are coming in the draft. And now they've done enough to allow them to target those players that they want rather than feeling some crazy pressure, most likely. But they still need to add, like I said, a swing tackle, because even if you draft a tackle at 36, it would be that player, Wiley, and then it's still a hodgepodge of, who knows, the sort of those random practice squad guys that they more or less, or end of the roster guys they had last year. So they still need to get more. And I would say the same thing inside. My understanding is they are still looking at more interior line depth, even if we assume, like, Ricky Stromberg is the backup center. Is Chris Paul the reserve guard, or is Allegretti even the starter necessarily? I think there's more to go there. So we will see about that. And obviously protecting the young quarterback, that's what all these things should be about, and the line is first and foremost. All right, the defensive line. Needless to say, we don't have to get into the tackle conversation, but they have completely remade their defensive end rotation, signing Dorrance Armstrong, Cleveland Farrell, Dante Fowler. You still have KJ Henry and Andre Jones. Wouldn't surprise me here as well if they, day two, they add a defensive end. Are you cool with what they've done so far at end in this free agency period?
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I think that you have three guys who this regime is familiar with. In one case, Adam Peters. In the other two cases, Dan Quinn. What I think does stand out, though, with these guys is that not a single one of them was, like, a full-time player. Even Farrell, in starting, was playing on less than 50% of the Niners' snaps. And so, we've become accustomed to Washington defensive linemen playing so much in games. Payne and Allen routinely play, 80, 90% of the snaps. Chase Young and Montez Sweat would play, like, 70, 80% of the snaps, something like that. These guys who have been brought in were not doing that. They were playing, like, 40% of the defensive snaps. So I wonder if, okay, will more be more with these guys, or was less more, and was the best way to maximize those guys, them playing as they were in their previous stops, which is to say not playing as much as I think some people may think. So, you know, obviously this is where the familiarity comes in. And so you would trust Peters and Quinn to know it because they have been with these guys. But I think there is more that does need to be done at edge. Again, I would think that that's more of a draft thing. You know, edge defender is not a position in which you can usually just get a great player in free agency. And again, I say usually, sometimes you can. But, you know, by and large, if you're a great edge guy, you don't make it to free agency. So I see these guys who have been brought in as stopgap measures. And, you know, the stopgapping may be over multiple seasons. It's not necessarily just this season. But I don't know that these are like the new guys at edge for years to come for Washington. I think it could be, you know, a 1 or 2 year thing. And if things go well, maybe it's longer than that, you know, because they are young enough to where it could be that way. But it does stand out, like, you know, you're not talking about guys who at least previously were on the field as much as we have grown accustomed to with edge defenders. So I just would, that would be the one thing that I'd wonder about. And maybe that does play into what you've written about, which is Jamin Davis being used as a pseudo edge defender. And maybe, you know, what is developed is this edge mix of Jamin Davis and Cleland Farrell and Dante Fowler Jr. and Dorrance Armstrong Jr. And maybe those four guys, you know, with a little bit of KJ Henry and Andre Jones, is how the team attacks rushing from the edges.
Yeah, no doubt. Now here's the thing, right? If they draft an edge with at 36 or 40, and they think, okay, that guy can go. Well, all of a sudden, you know, that player with Armstrong on the other end, who's a totally solid edge. He was second on Dallas 2 years in a row in sacks. Of course, it helps when everybody's paying attention to Micah Parsons, but whatever. Plus Allen and Payne, like that's, I'm not saying that's peak line with Sweat and Chase Young, a healthy Chase Young, but I am saying all of a sudden that's potentially pretty interesting, especially if you get more out of Allen and Payne and not forcing them to face double teams all the time and things like that. But yeah, this is about just filling in a gap. Basically what they did, they didn't re-sign James Smith-Williams and Casey Tuhill, but they kind of did. Like that's like it's that level where they're at, where you would think, okay, they've now filled in the depth, but they still probably need a starter again, unless they just say, hey, this is, we have enough to use. We'll do the best we can and move forward. Here's the other thing, and this gets to linebacker. You mentioned Jamin Davis. You know, the Frankie Louvu signing, which is probably the one that's gotten the most positive buzz, I would say, around the league, just from what I've seen and people I've talked to. And when he first signed, it was like, oh, okay, I guess this is the new Mike linebacker who can be used all over the place. And now, with Bobby Wagner signed, it looks like Louvu is going to be more of the Micah Parsons piece for the Dan Quinn defenses from Dallas, where he's that chess piece you move here, there, and everywhere. And perhaps, you know, he's undersized. You can't just say he's going to be a full-time defensive end or anything, but maybe they do use him in that way a lot to get after the quarterback, or just have a guy that can do all kinds of different things from different spots. And perhaps they don't want to clog up the defensive end line because they feel that Louvu could end up playing there some, and maybe Jamin as well, even though I've heard that's not a position switch. So, but the Bobby Wagner signing completely altered how I thought of Louvu. And again, that's sort of the point. We don't know what we don't know until we do. So I think that's where this defense starts getting very interesting. As we know, Al, other than drafting Davis in the first round, they have largely ignored the linebacker position, like to the nth degree. And now they quickly, between Louvu and Wagner, have added, you know, two legit pieces and guys who play every down, at least they did last year.
Yeah, I mean, I've joked about this, but I think it's true. Adam Peters and Dan Quinn did more at linebacker for Washington over 3 days, Monday through Wednesday, than Ron Rivera did over 4 years. And that's even with Ron being a linebacker. So, you know, I think there are a few things here. First of all, I think it's so interesting how, especially on defense in the NFL, it's becoming like the NBA, positionless. And, you know, you see safeties play corner and corners play safeties, and you see linebackers play safety and safeties play linebacker. And now we're looking at, you know, potentially linebackers playing defensive end, and just, it's all kind of a mishmash now. And so I think to get sucked into who are your starting four defensive linemen, who are your starting three linebackers, who are your starting four defensive backs? First of all, everyone's a nickel so much of the time, but second of all, I think like we got to get away from that, because like you were just outlining, there's a lot of gray area with these people. And Frankie Louvu looks like he could be an example of that. But if we are just talking pure linebacker, I think it does stand out. Jamin Davis is no better than the number three linebacker on this team now. Like, if you're just ranking the linebackers, if you're doing a Commanders linebacker hierarchy, he's clearly the number three. Louvu and Wagner are more accomplished and are better than Davis is. And, you know, I earlier talked about this coming season being a big season for Dotson and St. Juice. And I said Payne, it's a little different with him. He's gotten paid, but, you know, he's only had the one really good season, which was the contract season. So I think there are things to be determined with him. But this coming season is a big season for Jamin Davis, right? Presumably that fifth-year option is not going to be picked up this offseason. We'll see, but I would think the team is not going to exercise that. He's coming off all this legal stuff. He could be facing a league suspension for a violation of the personal conduct policy, and he just has not been that good. I mean, he has been mid at best. And, you know, I think when you're 3 years into your professional career and people are still saying, well, is he really that good? What exactly is he? I think most of the time that means you're not that good and you're not going to end up being what you were drafted to be. And, you know, you can talk about different roles and things of that nature, but I don't know, man. I feel like over three seasons, we should have seen a lot more from this guy, and we haven't. So I think the spotlight is on Jamin Davis to perform this coming season. I think it's very intriguing, the stuff that you've written about Davis. Hopefully he's going to be used in a way that maximizes his ability for sure. And I think getting Wagner and Louvu is going to allow for some of that. So I'm excited. You know, the only thing with Wagner would be, is we know in the NFL, when it goes, it goes. So you can be really good, but if you're well into your 30s, it can fall off a cliff in an instant. And that would just be the one concern. At some point, it is going to go for Wagner, but it certainly has not gone yet. He has been, I think, the number one linebacker in the NFL over the last decade. He's a slam dunk future Pro Football Hall of Famer. And he certainly last season demonstrated that he still has plenty left. And so, you know, to think about our team, which has not had truly good linebacker play in forever, that could change this coming season is really exciting. So I'm very happy with these signings of Wagner and Louvu.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It's an interesting dynamic. It is hilarious that the team that had a linebacker for head coach and a linebacker for defensive coordinator was the one who just never invested in that spot. And by the way, like, I think another thing, again, we all have to somewhat retrain ourselves in how we think. You're right. We don't need to think in conventional terms, who's going to be the starting defensive line or the linebackers. But what we did for the last regime, you know, Montez Sweat and Chase Young, when they were healthy, they just kind of stayed on the same side of the field. There was, they didn't move Jamin Davis around to try to, you know, find an advantage with him rushing the passer or something. I think that's going to be very, very different here. And that's what is part of the intrigue for sure. Jamin Davis and Forbes are probably the two guys where I'm fascinated to see what this coaching staff gets out of them. Because athletically, Jamin Davis should be doing a lot more than he has been. But the other rub is, if Louvu and Wagner are playing every down, which is basically what they both did their last stops, where is Jamin Davis even playing? If is he just playing at edge? I mean, they're not switching his position, I was told. So how does that work? How does he even get on the field much, right? So all that's going to be interesting for sure. Let's talk about safety before we get to corner, because there at least some things have happened. Jeremy Chinn is in. Jeremy Reeves is back. You also have Quan Martin, Derek Forrest, and Percy Butler. Again, if I'm playing the 53-player projection, that may very well be the safety room right now. Because it's a new regime, I can't assume that everybody is safe. But, you know, relatively speaking, right, Forrest should be fine. Whether he's a starter again, we'll see. You know, Percy Butler, you know, he's had an up and down first two seasons. But, you know, he's a fourth-round pick, and I don't think that was a mistake. So presumably he'll be there. As I said before, I think Jeremy Chinn is an incredibly fascinating piece. And by the way, tying this into the linebacker, you know, he's one of those safeties that sort of like the Landon Collins-y, like where it's like he might be better off playing closer to the line of scrimmage. But if that's the case, how does that work with having Wagner and Louvu? Dallas last year played nickel or dime, I think like 94.5% of their snaps. So it's all the time, no more than two linebackers. they played a lot of three safety looks. Is Chin in there as more of a, you know, linebacker type? Do they have him playing more in the back, towards the back end of the defense? Same thing with Quan Martin, who showed better as the year went on. Derek Forrest, I don't know, feels to me more like a strong safety than a center fielder, but what happens with him, all et cetera, et cetera. So no clue how they're going to deploy them all and no idea if it'll be good, but they at least have interesting pieces in this sort of transitional year to see what they can do. So I think this is going to be a fun group to watch. And again, I would assume this is probably the group.
Chin, I think, could be the steal of this free agent class. With him, it's all about staying healthy. And, you know, that worries you because our team does not have the greatest history when it comes to guys with injury history staying healthy. But when he has been healthy, he has been so good. And so, you know, they get him on this, you know, short-term contract. It reminds me in some ways, you brought up the 2020 offseason earlier, reminds me in some ways of the Ronald Darby acquisition, where big-time injury history gets a one-year contract in that 2020 offseason and ended up being so good for Washington in that 2020 season, and maybe something similar happens with Chin. But if Chin is healthy, he's the starter. I mean, he has played at a high level in his NFL career. I think with the other guys, this is where you really are going to look at the new coaching staff and say, okay, boys, go to work and, you know, develop these guys and see what is truly in these guys. I think the jury's out on all of them. Forrest was very good two seasons ago. This past season, obviously injury marred, but he was not playing at his best, I didn't think, before he got hurt. Quan Martin came on late in the year, but we remember early in the season wasn't playing at all. And Percy Butler was very much a mixed bag. At times looked good, at times did not look so good. So, you know, the jury's out on those guys, but this is where you want the coaching staff to get to work and hopefully get a lot out of those guys. And I think what we might see at safety is this season is an evaluation season with those guys, and then maybe next offseason we see the team potentially do more at safety via free agency or the trade market of, you know, determining what the team has and doesn't have at that safety spot. But you're right. You know, I think if you went into the season with this as the safety mix, you'd have reason for hope and optimism. You know, it would not feel hopeless. Like, there's talent there. It's just a question of how good are those young guys.
And I know when we were at the combine, like, I purposely asked Dan Quinn about a couple of specific players because it was so, we were all so much in the weeds on the bigger picture. So the two I got in were Jamin Davis and Quan Martin. And Martin, he seemed to be, you know, enthusiastic. Obviously, this is all everybody's great type of year. But at the same point, you know, you can read into some of the authenticity. He seemed to be generally excited to see what happens with a guy who did play better as the year went on. Now, while the safety room seems set, the corner room is very, very open at this point. We'll assume Benjamin St. Juste starts somewhere, whether that's a slot or back outside. And, you know, as much as Emmanuel Forbes struggled in year one, I'm still in my head saying, okay, he's going to be high in the rotation. Obviously, first round pick. If not, then, you know, we're really heading into bust territory. But at the moment, I would assume that, you know, better days ahead for him. But Kendall Fuller is not going to come back unless there's a major change in the market for him and the plans for the team. This, you know, older cornerback in theory is going to get good money. So, you know, move on there. But after that, then it's just your Christian Holmes, your Tariq Castro Fields types, you know, who are, you know, borderline, you know, end of roster practice squad types. They still need more here. I've heard they have been looking at some corners, and I saw a thing that Jeremy Fowler reported today that there was a cornerback who was going to be visiting Washington. So I imagine we'll see some sort of a signing soon, but it may just be a, you know, depth piece as opposed to the Kendall Fuller equivalent. Again, this is where the draft comes into play. How nervous are you though right now to look at it where, as it shapes up, that like St. Juste and Forbes, St. Juste is not a number one and Forbes obviously was tough to keep on the field. So how are your nerves at this moment with that scenario?
Don't feel good about it. You know, this is not a group that was very good to begin with. And if guys like St. Juste and Forbes are not the players we want them to be, then things look even worse. you know, even if St. Juice and Forbes have good seasons this upcoming season, we all know how it is. I mean, you need at least three starting caliber corners, and for depth purposes, you want like four or five. And you could argue right now the team has, what, one starting caliber corner in St. Juice? And again, he's not coming off a very good season. So I think there's work to be done. I certainly would not be surprised if the team adds a starting caliber corner in free agency. This obviously would be a position you could attack in the draft. I mean, I want to make this clear. In the draft, I'm a big best player available guy. So I don't like needs dictating picks in drafts. But I think positional value factors into BPA, and corner is a premium position. So in theory, on your board at one of your picks, maybe even more than one of your picks, you'll have a corner who you have as the best guy on your board. But corner is one of those spots where you look at what was done over the last 4 years and you scratch your head, man, and you're kind of like, what happened here? And how is it that we wound up at this point? And, you know, of course, you go through, well, what happened with William Jackson III? And you look at the developments of some of these younger corners that just has not been there. I think Kendall Fuller has been a bright spot these last few years. Maybe it turns out that St. Juice is a good corner. I certainly hope that that's the case. I thought he did some good things prior to this past season. But the Forbes thing right now is alarming. And there's not much beyond those people. And, you know, of all the position groups on defense, you could argue that corner is where you need your most depth. And this is where the team right now might have the least depth. It's funny. Right now, you look at linebacker and you could say, you know what? There is some depth there. You know, you certainly feel like there's talent there. Corner right now, that might have overtaken linebacker as that position group on defense that has you the most concern.
Yeah. I think to me, this is the room I'm going to give the most benefit of the doubt to in terms of the coaching last year. I don't want to keep going down this path, but, you know, they replaced Chris Harris with Brett Wieselmeyer, who ends up getting fired during the season with Jack Del Rio. And, you know, it just looked like the secondary just took a big step back, and Forbes never looked comfortable out there. So and then the fact that this new staff has a real emphasis on the secondary, since Joe Witt came from the secondary, they bring Jason Simmons in, another defensive back coach to be the passing game coordinator. Plus you add a actual position coach in, Donatel. So, you know, they are not saying they're extra emphasizing that, just the way it came down, but they've got new coaches. So again, let's see, how can this new staff get these guys up to speed? And maybe that's the biggest factor. But yes, they're going to need more bodies at a minimum, and I would like to think they had at least another cornerback where you say, hey, we're going to start, you know, like if Quan Martin is, say, the nickelback, and then you have Jeremy Chinn and Derek Forrest, just for argument's sake, then you only maybe need two guys. But that second one, I'd like to see somebody you could say, hey, he can start if Forbes is not ready to go. I think that's that is key. All right, lastly, special teams. You know, we've had fun the last few years. It's, you know, Tress Way and his guys, and it is you know, he's like Will Smith in that meme where he's just like in the living room, like looking around. Now he does have new friends. Brandon McManus, longtime kicker, is there. Tyler Ott, long snapper with the Ravens last year, but before that, Seattle, where he was coached by the Washington's new special teams coordinator, Larry Izzo. Tress Way and Ott also go back to high school. They played against each other, rival high schools in Tulsa, so there's a familiarity there. I'm not going to sit here and say that we need to debate the long snapper and all that. And McManus, you know, he's one of these guys who he's mostly been with, you know, Denver his whole career, but, you know, he, like in fantasy football, like he's typically not the guy you're like, you need to get, but he's solid. You pick him up, you put him in, you know, he'll do what he does. He didn't miss any extra points last year, which is nice. Not great from distance, but, you know, okay. We know no complaints here, right?
With McManus, no. It's an odd statistical profile, though. He has not been good on field goal attempts of at least 50 yards, despite having kicked in that mile-high air of Denver for so long. That's surprising. And yet, he has been exceptional on field goal attempts 40 to 49 yards. So, he's so good in that range, but he has not been very good in the slightly larger range. So that's just kind of funny to me. I think with special teams, I do want to say this. So I've seen it said a lot that, well, Jamison Crowder is a good punt returner, did a good job on punt returns last year.
No.
He actually ended up not doing that. He initially was doing quite well on punt returns. Yes, he ended up ranking near the bottom of the NFL in yards per punt return last season. And if you go back and look at his initial stint with Washington, beyond the 2016 season, he did not have great success as a punt returner, at least if you go by yards per punt return. And I remember in his later seasons with Washington, like the 2017 season, there were issues in terms of him not fielding punts that he should have fielded. So I don't look at Crowder as like the guy who has to be or absolutely will be this team's punt returner this coming season. I think there should be opportunity at that spot. Not to say that Crowder can't be part of the mix or shouldn't be given the opportunity to win that spot, but I think it gets overstated what he was as a punt returner last season and honestly what he has been as a punt returner for Washington over his two stints with the team.
He basically had the same yards per carry as Dax Milne, who everybody criticized. And Crowder had, what, that 60-yard return, which Dax Milne never had that type of play. So if you know, I know you can't take it out, but if you take out that one return, his numbers even worse. That said, again, we talked about the receiver room. You know, if you typically keep six, Crowder can help if need be. Like, he's not the guy you're leaning on, but, like, he can help. And, yeah, at a minimum now they have something there, similar to a lot of these other spots. Kazmir Allen is still around, so is Dax Milne. And, of course, you know, you draft a running back or receiver who has those chops as well, or maybe a defensive back, then it completely changes everything. So, yes, I wouldn't say Crowder is definitely anything or an upgrade. Also, with Antonio Gibson gone, they need somebody to return kicks. So that's a whole other thing. And maybe that person does punts as well, depending on how they sort it out. And, I would also say, just like in general, the fact that Reeves and Crowder are the two guys they have re-signed to this point who are basically special teams guy, that, you know, that's a special teams is a group that whoever, you know, the coordinator has no idea who he's going to have for the most part, because it all depends on who's making the roster in certain spots. And, you know, is Christian Holmes making the team? If he is, then he's probably one of their gunners. And if he's not, then somebody else is. But at least with Reeves and, you know, just having Crowder there, at least, like, okay, there's two veterans. If they're on this team, they'll be part of that mix. So, so that part helps. But yeah, special teams is a bit of a crapshoot. We don't have to get into the Reeves part, but obviously, no brainer, and I'm sure fans are pretty thrilled with that. So, I guess this last question for you: when you're looking at this, how much are you looking at it from the lens of 2024? Because I think that a lot of people still do that. Hey, they're doing great. They're going to look a lot better next year. And other people are like, well, wait, they still have these big holes, or a lot of these guys are not big stars. How are they improving? Are you looking at it more from that perspective, or more for the bigger picture that this is just the start of what Peters and friends are doing?
More so the bigger picture, but with the understanding that if the bigger picture is being adequately addressed, then the shorter term can have success. Like, I think if you're building things in a good way, you'll have success a lot sooner than you may think. And so I think if you make long-term decisions this offseason, you could still end up having great success this coming season. I don't think it's an either-or proposition, especially in the NFL. When you have this small sample size of 17 regular season games, you don't have to be great to do great. And there are so many examples, right, in recent NFL history of quick turnarounds to where I don't think anyone should get sucked into this idea of, well, if you engage in long-term thinking, that precludes you from winning in the short term. I don't see it that way at all. And I think especially with some of what has been done in free agency so far, with, as we talked about, what would appear to be potentially anyway, stopgap holdover type measures, this team could be good, could be much improved this coming season. I mean, I don't know how much say-so Dan Quinn has in player personnel. I would presume he has at least some. But I think people need to remember, he won the NFC Championship in his second season as Falcons head coach. So he is well aware of the nature of the quick turnaround, and that something like that can happen. So I'm not saying that's happening here. I'd love to see that. But we all get it. Like, you don't have to be bad for years in order to get good in the NFL. If you're making smart decisions, you can get a lot better quickly. And that would be the hope here this offseason. You know, there are so many of these free agent acquisitions, right? So you think about it from a standpoint of like diversifying risk. If you just hit on, say, 60% of these guys, you know, to say nothing of like 2/3 of these guys, that's going to lead to some real improvement. And I think that's what the Commanders are banking on. They're not going to hit on all of these signings that are being made here. But if you can hit on a good chunk of them, that can really help you. And it's a funny deal, but that 2020 offseason that we brought up, that was actually a really good offseason for this team. That's actually one of the better free agent classes for Washington since modern free agency began in 93. And so if you have something like that this offseason, who's to say that the team isn't much improved this coming year? It all comes down to quarterback, as we understand. But beyond that, I think there's an opportunity here, especially with these guys coming in and presumably being starters slash significant players from the get-go for this team to be a lot better this coming season.
Well, look, if they're gonna, if it comes down to quarterback, then they better go out and find a quarterback who can only play on one leg and another one who's sleeping on his sister's couch. otherwise, that's the plan. What are we talking about here? Al, it's always a great decision to have you on the podcast, and of course, everybody, make sure you follow Al on Twitter at Al Galdi and subscribe to the Al Galdi podcast wherever you do your podcasting. Look forward to chatting, presumably, next week on your show, and we'll see what happens. We made it through this conversation with only one signing, so not bad. But I think we stayed under the Vegas line there.
We did. It has been such a week, and you know, from a standpoint of like being a fan, it's been so exciting. I can only imagine though, for someone like you who actually has to break the news, what it has been like. So this has been something, and it's exciting what's happening with the team. We wanted this, and we're getting this, and we shall see where it all takes us. Who knows?
Indeed. My guy, I appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Okay, thank you.
Fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.